Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Under a Pile of Books, and I am here with John Bierce, author of the Mage Errant series, which I've read the first two books in this series and have enjoyed them. I think you will too, especially if you like progression fantasy. The first book is Into the Labyrinth. And then that continues with Jewel of the Endless Urg. So welcome, John.
Hey, it's good to be on.
So, John, I wanted to kind of start out here tonight just with kind of a general question. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a digital nomad. Before the pandemic hit, I was traveling full time, just living off my writing. And since the pandemic hit, I've been stuck in Vietnam, actually, which has been pretty nice because, you know, they're one of the first countries to beat the virus. Then when it came back in July, it only took a couple months to re-beat it again. So, you know, mostly I've just been able to live normally and go to the beach and stuff. So that's been nice.
Nice.
I went to school for a few different things. I've got 7 years of undergrad under my belt. Technically no degree, but I went to school for English first, then probably switched to history, and then most of my schooling, the biggest chunk was in geology, which that especially has played a huge influence on my writing.
Oh, interesting. I can actually kind of see that. So kind of speaking of writing then, What was for you kind of the inspiration behind the Mage Errant series?
It's very rare that I ever have just a single moment of aha inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be this moment of inspiration for, you know, part of the world building, this moment for one of the characters, you know, so on and so forth. Lots of little moments. And often I won't even know they're the same project for quite a while. It just comes together. Back one time I wrote a short story that just came to me in a dream, which was, you know, I felt very artsy doing that. it was a good short story, too. I was pretty proud of it. But honestly, the impetus for writing Mage Errant was just I was reading Wizard School books, and I ran out of Wizard School books to write, and I just got so frustrated I started writing a Wizard School book.
That's actually pretty awesome.
Never enough Wizard Schools.
Hey, you know, isn't that the truth? And it, I mean, come on, it's a popular genre, you know.
Oh yeah, no, it just very much appeals to you know, kind of universal experiences. You know, we've all we've all gone to school, we've all dealt with just unfamiliar, overwhelming situations. You know, and for the vast majority of us, you know, high school was not a fun time all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. High school was pretty rough for most people in a lot of ways, you know, and if it wasn't, then, you know, I worry about you.
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, that actually kind of that the social awkwardness that sometimes accompanies high school, certainly, you know, the years before that, middle school or whatnot, or, you know, just, you know, the experience of being bullied or that kind of thing, all of that stuff, I think comes out in different ways with the characters in the series. And as I said, I've read the first two books, Into the Labyrinth and Jewel of the Endless Urg, and I'm planning to move on to the third, hopefully soon. I actually just read the second one recently. But one of the things that is interesting to me, right, is Hugh, the main character of the series, really has a good deal of social anxiety. And I think you do a really good job of portraying this authentically and honestly. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, what did you draw on for Hugh's character, whether that be, you know, experiences you had yourself or folks you know, or just learning about social anxiety generally? Like, it's a very, I think, accurate and real portrayal. So,
I mean, all of the above. Like, I've definitely got plenty of social anxiety of my own. You know, a lot of it takes very different forms than Hughes, because there's so many different kinds of social anxiety and so many ways it expresses, you know. But So, you know, I drew heavily on my own experiences, drew heavily on all of my friends, and did a ton of research. And it can be very frustrating to write at times, you know. Sometimes I just want to shake you and get him to stop being ridiculous. But it's been it's also been pretty cathartic in some ways too, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean that makes sense. I can see how, you know, it could be cathartic. And actually, one of the things, you know, I won't give any spoilers here, but I actually, in some ways, I think in the second book, we get some more wide ranging viewpoints or whatnot, and I think that actually lets us see a little bit of Hugh from like the outside, or how he's perceived by other characters, and I think some of that actually like that just gives us a different perspective on it, and one that I thought was really good just as a reader. So
yeah, well, he was definitely a super unreliable narrator.
Yeah, right.
And so just I had, you know, I really much enjoyed like branching out and giving more points of view in the second book and later on, in great part so I could show yeah, Hugh is not only just unreliable, you know, he's loving, but he's also an idiot.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. You talk a little bit about unreliable narrators there, and you know, I know that's something that sometimes authors play with oftentimes whenever they're kind of developing a character or whatnot, and figuring out how that character interacts with the plot or whatnot of the story. And so I'm curious for you, in terms of your writing, which normally comes first for you, character, plot, or setting?
You know, it used to always be setting. Okay. You know, I'd come up with whatever weird world. You know, I'm heavily influenced by like Larry Niven, Hal Clement, you know, this very classic over the top crazy sci-fi world building tradition, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you've probably encountered like Larry Niven's Ring World and stuff, right?
Yep.
Or his Integral Trees, which I love that book so much. Yeah, also highly recommend Hal Clement if you're in the mood for some weird sci-fi world building. You know, Mission of Gravity features a planet with gravity that varies from the equator to the poles. And science actually works.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's fun. And so, you know, so to an extent, you know, I kind of follow that. Like the world of Mage Errant, Anastas, it's got a huge moon, right? Way bigger than Earth's moon proportionally, you know. Average tides on Anastas are 40 feet plus, you know, comparable to the Bay of Fundy.
Right.
And yeah, kind of. And just in general, you know, there's a much higher ecological cliff. You know, the boundary zones between ecosystems are a lot steeper in sort of an energy sense than they are on Earth. Both due to, you know, the more extreme geography and geology of everything. Getting a little off point. So usually I do setting first. With Mage Errant, setting actually was last. Hugh's character was really the first thing to pop into mind. You know, and then I started fleshing out the plot, and then you know, going then got to the setting really. And that's just a total reversal of the way you should do things, you know? I think that was part of me, you know, really growing as a writer, because since then it's just kind of been bouncing all over the place. So I think that was me taking a big step forward and freeing myself from this more procedural way I used to design this sort of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting that it's almost a, you know, complete reversal for you from the way that you would normally, or what maybe your habit had been previous to this. So and I mean, it makes sense. I think you know, especially in the first book, it's very clear that, you know, the story revolves around Hugh, so it makes sense that that's kind of where it started. But I'm one of the things that I love about fantasy in particular, the same is true in science fiction, of course. But in the larger genre of science fiction and fantasy, one of the things that I love is that setting, you know, and just the things you can do and the ways you can play with that, from cultural things to, as you were mentioned, ecological, geographical, you know, sort of things, from gravity to moons to tides to how long a year is to, you know, how long a day, you know, all of these things you can play with in a sci-fi fantasy setting, just in some really cool ways. So I, you know, setting is something that I really, really enjoy reading about, you know, in my fantasy, unique worlds and cultures and settings. So, so another aspect that, you know, kind of falls under setting, to some extent is, at least in fantasy, is kind of the magic system or the way that magic works, in the world or in the novel. So the magic system in Mage Errant is very eclectic. You know, it doesn't kind of fall into, like, if you were trying to categorize magic systems the way fantasy authors tend to write them, it doesn't fall neatly into like a category. There are kind of elements from a bunch of different categories, maybe is how you could say it. But how did you go about developing that? And then kind of part B of the question, how do you ensure continuity now as you're writing with such an eclectic magic system?
So it started off, I basically started off by developing a backbone for it. One of the first world building elements for the world is I came up with a resource system for the magic system, you know? I just postulated in, an ether, people used to believe that between the worlds there was a mysterious substance filling, you know, space called the ether. And, you know, as I jumped off that, I postulated that there was this mysterious substance that normally didn't interact very much with physical mass and is generated as a byproduct of entropy, you know, substance or energy. I'm not making it clear to the characters generally because they, you know, they don't understand physics like we do. So I started off the resource system, which how does the ether move around? And that's actually based off of the way the fluids move through aquifers, in the ground. Yeah. And then from there, I developed the actual magic system itself and how it functions, which was actually, of all things, inspired by, Michel Foucault. I was reading one of his books a few years back, The Order of Things, and, you know, it's a long, dry exploration of the histories of economics, linguistics, and biology, in European history. And one of the things he talks about is representation space, right, which is this sort of conceptualization from the history of linguistics, way before linguistics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
In medieval times, a lot of scholars would basically study languages in an effort to, trace them back to older and older forms and rediscover the pre-Tower of Babel language.
Of course.
And they believe that the older a word is, the closer it was to accurately representing the object itself. It's very Platonic, mm-hmm. in the sense of, you know, everything's a shadow of the perfect form of something existing in some, you know, Platonic space. And they believe that, you know, the original pre-Babel language, Adamic, I've heard it called before, perfectly represented everything it described, right? Or it didn't describe it all. Every word represented the thing perfectly. Mm-hmm. And so for Mage Errant, I kind of inverted that. Where instead, it's a strictly descriptive rather than representative system, right? The affinities, you know, there can be a lightning mage or a hair mage or bone mage, yep. You know, whatever. There is a hair mage in book 3.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the thing, it basically, there can be an affinity for any real world substance or process, behavior, structure, you know, whatever, that is described by language. And it can't be something made up, right? It's got to be something real. Which is fun because, you know, one of the characters has a dream affinity. And I've had a few people look askance that, and it's just like, are you telling me you don't dream? yeah, so it's got a weird, complicated, postmodern backbone to the magic system. Well, postmodern slash, you know, science inspired, which I guess a lot of postmodernism is. But and so that actually helps. There's a few other principles and stuff to it that I could talk about for a while, and some of those I want to keep hidden. But having that really well fleshed out backbone to the magic system means that I can take it to a huge variety of places that give it that very eclectic feel that you talked about. And it makes it a lot easier to run because I have all these basic principles, you know, that I wrote to mimic, you know, natural processes in some ways. And I can just run from there. It lets me keep things straight a lot easier. And I also have memory for details.
Well, I'm sure that helps. Yeah. I love that, you know, some of the like behind the scenes inspiration for the magic system comes from like, you know, medieval linguistics and the search for like the ultimate Ur-tongue or whatever. You know, that's fascinating to me. I've studied to some extent, linguistics and ancient languages and whatnot. And so that's, to me, that's really fascinating, as a kind of place of inspiration for a magic system. So that's kind of cool. I like that. I like that a lot. The kind of philosophical side of that, is really fun. So with kind of shift gears here for a moment or two. What would you say really draws you to fantasy as a genre? Either as a reader or as, you know, an author?
You know, I gotta be honest, I just really like Wizards and Dragons. I think part of it, as you know, why I do as a writer, I am very much a perfectionist in some regards, and in mainly regards getting the research right. So with sci-fi, I would definitely get in a loop of, am I getting this science precisely right constantly? Mm. And fantasy gives me a little more room to not worry about that so much, not get caught up in endless research loops.
Right, right.
And also I get to have wizards and government by kaiju.
Yeah, but I mean, that is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I you're not going to find many books I write in the future that don't involve giant monsters somehow. I think The Rack is my recent and awkwardly timed play book.
Yeah, awkwardly timed, certainly.
Yeah, 4 days after I sent it to my editor, the WHO declared COVID a pandemic. But yeah, it's one of the few things I've written without giant monsters. And those totally don't work. The physics for giant monsters don't work at all, but I don't care. I love them too much.
You know, but again, like you said, you can get away with some of that in fantasy. You know, in fairness, I suppose to some extent, depending on the sort of science fiction you're writing, you can get away with some of that in science fiction as well. But certainly in fantasy, you know, you don't have to defend how, you know, a dragon is able to fly. You know, people just accept that it's a dragon, it flies. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very much too, I feel like the two genres, just all speculative fiction in general, the borders are getting blurrier and blurrier for decades now.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that.
And Yeah, and in a lot of ways, in a lot of ways, Mage Errant very much falls, close to that borderline, just because it draws so heavily from science mm-hmm. in so many regards. You know, like Hugh's affinity, which I won't spoil it, but his main affinity that he develops, it very heavily draws on magiology education. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you were to take a mineralogy class, you'll start immediately recognizing, like, oh, that's what's going on there. So definitely, like, got my money's worth out of my geology education, even if I didn't get my degree.
Hey,
we'll finish that
song. Inspiration for writing. So now. This next one is a question that I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, and I've been told that this is the hardest question to answer. So here you go. If you could have dinner with any character in all of science fiction and fantasy, who would it be, and why?
So I really struggled with this one. This is such a difficult question because there's so many good options. So I think, I guess, are we having dinner in their universe on Earth or a totally separate third-party universe?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Let's say you're having dinner like this is here on Earth. This is here on Earth with any character from science fiction or fantasy.
You know what? I think I've got to go with Bilbo Baggins. I don't think you can beat Bilbo Baggins for a dinner companion.
Yeah, no.
That's kind of the thing.
I have to agree. I think if you're legitimately having dinner, Bilbo Baggins. You know that's it's
that is what he does.
I was going to say
he is about.
Yeah, and you know he'll sing you a song or compose a quick poem for you, you know, in the middle of the entree. But you know, it'd be nice, you know, good conversation, smoke a pipe afterward or something, you know.
Always be fast with a tasteful joke.
Oh man. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on and talking and sharing a little bit about your process and your writing and your inspirations. Where can folks find you and your books online?
You can find my books, both Major and Lorac, on Amazon. You can find me personally at my website, johnbierce.com. Or on Twitter, let me double check my Twitter username, @John_Bierce, or I'm frequently on Reddit, where my username is just u/JohnBierce. Any of those are great ways to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Oh, and the book 4 audiobook is coming out on November 4th or 24th.
Awesome. For those of you who prefer your books in audiobook, these are. So bear that in mind.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, John.